From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Iran has foiled attempts by foreign enemies to turn anti-government protests into an insurgency aimed at overthrowing the Islamic Republic. The Ayatollah said these events, a reference to the protests, shared a common focus. That was the difference between the honest and rightful demands of the people and the wild, destructive behavior of others. Speaking in the holy city of Homs, the Ayatollah accused the U.S. and Israel of carefully organizing the plot to overthrow the government. But he also acknowledged the economic challenges facing Iranians. More than 20 were killed, and by one account, thousands were arrested. Meanwhile, exiled Iranian Prince Reza Pahlavi, speaking to the Associated Press, said the people in Iran are acting out of hopelessness.
I think you're talking about a moment in time in our country's history where people who are simply fed up and have nothing to lose anymore, and they know that this situation, as long as it prevails, there's no hope for them in any sense, are really now taking some very brave and defiant steps. And that's very important, I think, particularly from the outside we're looking in to understand.
The son of the late Shah, overthrown in 1979, said regime change is the ultimate formula, and it won't come about by external forces, but rather by the Iranian people themselves. South African President Jacob Zuma Tuesday said he'll set up a commission of inquiry into allegations of corruption, following release of an anti-graft report and Parliament's decision to review impeachment proceeding. Mr. Zuma, who will leave office next year, was ordered by the Constitutional Court last month to set up the commission. The 75-year-old Zuma has denied numerous allegations of wrongdoing since taking office in 2009. He stepped down as leader of the ruling African National Congress Party in December. This is VOA News. The U.S. and the U.N. Tuesday welcomed the decision by North Korea to take part in next month's Winter Olympic Games. The decision followed the first high-level Korean talks in 2 years. White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders said it would not affect U.S. participation at the Games.
The North Korean participation is an opportunity for the regime to see the value of ending its international isolation by denuclearizing. We hope that we can continue to move forward on that front, but certainly doesn't affect our participation.
However, the State Department said while it views the talks as a positive development, it is in close contact with South Korea to ensure the North does not violate existing U.N. Security Council sanctions by its participation. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres welcomed the talks, especially the pending resumption of military discussions to lower the risk of miscalculation. Russian reaction to the news came from its U.N. Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia.
I welcome it. I welcome that they started talking to each other. That's what we're saying all the time, that in order to solve something, people at least need to start talking.
South Korea's unification ministry says the talks could lead to a discussion of the fundamental resolution of the nuclear issue. Tunisian police Tuesday clashed with anti-government protesters in the capital Tunis and several other towns against austerity measures. This protester said he took to the streets over high prices and unemployment. The protests erupted Monday and left at least one person dead. The government has increased taxes to reduce the country's ballooning deficit. Turkey Tuesday summoned the ambassadors of Russia and Iran to complain about what it called the Syrian government's violation of the borders of a de-escalation zone in northwest Idlib province. Meanwhile, the Syrian Observatory of Human Rights said at least 24 civilians were killed in airstrikes and artillery fire on a rebel enclave near Damascus. The U.S. still doesn't know what sickened some American diplomats at the U.S. Embassy in Havana more than a year ago, but a U.S. official told U.S. lawmakers it's incomprehensible Cuba's government was unaware of what happened and who was responsible. Francisco Palmieri is a Deputy Assistant Secretary of State.
The Secretary has made a decision to convene an accountability review board. There will be a congressional notification.
Cuban officials who launched their own investigation denied any knowledge or involvement in the matter. But I'm Jesus Licky, Professor Emeritus at the Center for Cuba and Cuban American Studies at the University of Miami, is skeptical.
My own analysis is that this happened. It happened with the knowledge of the Cuban government. Nothing like this could have happened without the Cuban government and the Cuban intelligence apparatus knowing it.
The Trump administration has drawn down embassy staff and expelled Cuban diplomats. In Pakistan Tuesday, a bomb detonated in Quetta, killing at least 6 people, including 5 policemen. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 10th, and here are some other stories we're covering. Nigeria's Elections Commission announces the date for the country's 2019 general elections.
Date is Saturday, February 16, 2019, for the presidential election, and 2 weeks later, we're going to have the governorship and state assembly election.
Rotimi Ayakemi, a spokesperson for Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, army wives in Liberia protested to demand payment of their husband's compulsory savings. We have analysis why South Sudan's former army chief rebelled against President Salva Kiir. Zambia's three-month-old cholera epidemic claims 64 lives.
The update as of today, according to the Minister of Health, is that we have 64 fatalities since the outbreak on October 6th, and there is 2,800 people affected.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. Heavy rains in the DRC worsened that country's cholera epidemic, and an online portal for U.S.-Africa trade bypasses obstacles. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, known as INEC, Tuesday announced the date for the country's 2019 presidential and National Assembly elections. Commission Chair Professor Makmun Yakubu Tuesday said the polls will take place February 16, 2019. This will be the ninth presidential election in Africa's most populous nation since its independence from Britain in 1960. Commission spokesperson Rotimi Oyakemi says elections for governor, state assembly, and other local offices will take place March 2, 2019.
The date is Saturday, February 16, 2019, for the presidential election. And 2 weeks later, we're going to have the governorship and state assembly election.
Is there a timetable that also goes with the date, this announcement, in terms of campaigning?
Yes. We had, since March last year, announced this date. And if you go to the website, we have started the countdown to 2019. It's our own way of improving the situation and allowing for early preparations. You know, we are trying to follow the example of more mature democracies where we have certainty in the dates of election. For instance, in the United States, we know that every second Tuesday in November of the election year, I think that's when they have the election, and in Ghana in December of the election year. So the date we pick for 2019 is not just for 2019. It is to say that we now know that in every election year, it will be the particular date in February, followed by a particular date 2 weeks later for the governorship election.
So the February 16, 2019 is not just the presidential, but also what, the National Assembly elections?
Yes, Saturday, February 16, 2019 is for presidential and national assembly elections, while the governorship and state house of assembly election is slated for 2nd March 2019.
Nigeria has taken the lead in terms of holding these elections. Perhaps this will be the ninth election that your country will be having. Do you feel you have learned new things from election to election? In other words, how prepared will you be when 2019 come around?
Thank you very much. In fact, the present chairman of INEC and the national commissioner were sworn in 2015, November. And from that date up to now, we have conducted elections into over 175 constituencies. These elections entail a combination of by-elections, run elections, and end-of-tenure elections. As you may be aware, there were some elections that were annulled by the courts as an aftermath of the 2015 general election. Some of them were governorship elections. And the last governorship election we conducted on November 18th was the Anambra governorship election, which was highly successful. And we are building on the successes of 2015. Already, we have put a strategic plan in place, which will run from 2017 to 2021. There is also a strategic plan of action that is going to accomplish a strategic plan. And then we have election project plan, which is specifically for this 2019 general election. So implementation has already started this January. On Thursday, which is tomorrow, the commission will meet and then determine how much the 2019 general election will cost the nation. So I believe that with the experiences we have learned, we have had in conducting these several elections, and the synergy we have with all the stakeholders, security agencies, political parties, civil society organizations, the success we had in 2015 will be further boosted as we look to have a better election in 2019.
Rotimi Oyakemi is a spokesperson for Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission. You are speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. The wives of enlisted men in the armed forces of Liberia Tuesday blocked the main highway leading to the country's only international airport. The women were demanding payment of arrears of what they called compulsory savings deducted from their husband's wages over a 10-year period. They also complained about poor living conditions in the Edwa Benya Kesili military barracks outside the capital of Monrovia.
He said he's going to get back to home on Friday, but we should wait. We should wait until our husband dies before we get our husband and money. And what the man say? The man say he's going to get out on Friday, but we should wait. When our husband dies first, then we take the money. So now dead body should be put in. We block the road because there's no current here. We're sleeping in darkness.
No water.
Four more rice. No current. No water. The benefit, the 10 years benefit, the Junior Zakia saying this morning that we should wait. The money is not for sharing until our husband dies before we get the money. The 10 years benefit. The compulsory saving. The compulsory saving has been saving for good 10 years. They call the money according to your rank. At times they call $30, $40 every month. So the money now is plenty. They don't want to give it back to them before new government. But right, they don't want to give it to them before new government get on seat.
Because the compulsory saving now, we are getting on the street for the compulsory saving. They tell us in the barrier that our world don't wish for us to kill our house money. When we not kill them, they will not give all the money. A pastor, our friend, died from the army. I can call several good questions where the husband died from the army. They have received far ready.
Meanwhile, Liberia's Army Chief of Staff, Brigadier General Daniel Ziankan, promised to look into the Army wife's complaints.
The issue here is we are just getting to know how much we have in the banks, and the Minister of Defense have instructed the J3 for us to know how much we get in the bank, how much the minister is leaving with us, and how much was collected, how much is being expended. And we are going to get back to them. We are going to go through all the policies and you'll get from
us. Are they going to get that money?
Oh, yeah, sure.
They talk about, they're here in darkness. A lot of things are actually missing.
It is nothing to shy away from. We don't have 24-hour current, and that is national. You know, there are some problems as it relates to how much we collect from the government. That's what I say, I will get to you. We just want to put this under control first, and I will get to you later.
That was Brigadier General Daniel Ziankan, Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces of Liberia, speaking to local reporters Tuesday outside Monrovia. Today is Wednesday, the 10th day of January, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. The Zambian government has taken additional steps to contain a cholera epidemic that has claimed 64 lives and infected 2,800 people since it broke out in October last year. The Ministry of Home Affairs Tuesday announced the suspension of the Lusaka Department of National Registration, Passport and Citizenship offices due to the crisis. Amos Chanda, spokesperson for President Edgar Lungu, says the government has stepped up control measures with the military coming in to beef up civilian response, including the distribution of clean drinking water across Lusaka and townships with no access to clear drinking water.
The update as of today, according to the Minister of Health, is that we have 64 fatalities since the outbreak on October 6th, and there is 2,800 people affected, and the control measures have been escalated with the defense forces, military personnel getting into to beef up civilian response. The central business district where the epicenter of the epidemic was has been cleaned up and decontaminated, particularly the main trading center, City Market, where fresh fruits and vegetables were seen to be contaminated and broke drainages being the breeding ground partially for the epidemic. Those emergence works have been done, and there's been a massive program, distribution of water points, clean drinking water being distributed across the city in the townships that have no access to clean running water from the tap. There have been communal tanks set up by the Lusaka Water and Sewerage Company for free. This is to give as many people as possible access to safe drinking water. These are the measures in there. We are still quite worried that the numbers still remain around now in the 60s, that is, of the deaths, and then 2,800 people cumulatively affected. A number of them have been treated and surviving, and a number of them being treated at the biggest cholera center set up at the stadium. It is important to note that there were times when the daily infections would be as high as 164. I think that we are below 120 as of today. So there is considerable shift in terms of numbers downwards on the number of cases coming daily. It is hoped that with the escalated efforts, I think that we should be able to bring the epidemic under control.
Amos, has your government been able to pinpoint the exact origin of the cholera?
Yes, it was in a township called Garden Township, where the contamination was said to have been shallow wells. The wells that people drink were too close to the pit latrines and sanitary toilets that were dug. So there was cross-contamination. The water from the pit latrines was able to somehow connect with the water in the shallow wells, which have since been shut and buried. As to where that cholera bacteria came from, you know, to get into those shallow wells is not clear enough.
I'm reading where the president or your government has been criticized as not doing enough.
He's done as much as he can. He has ordered the military get involved to stem the tide against the epidemic. The free vaccine starting tomorrow. The Minister of Health has just launched a national vaccine program where vaccines against bacteria is being distributed, mass distribution of vaccines, emergency water supplies, military being deployed, emergency engineering works to get water supplied in central locations, clean drinking water for free.
So why did the Home Affairs suspend the Lusaka Department National Registration Passport and Citizenship Officers? Is it because of the cholera and the cholera?
Every single day, these are very crowded offices and where people are queuing up and the human contact. There's no other place where you can, other than the football stadium when there's a football match, there's no other place where you can have the highest concentration of people in one place than in at the National Registration Center and passports. So to reduce on human contact and overcrowding, I think the Minister of Home Affairs has taken steps, because there's a status of an instrument issued by the third instrument number 79, issued by the Minister of Health, under which gatherings of more than five people are prohibited in areas where the cholera epidemic has been detected. In the area where the National Registration Office is located in Kamara, it's one of the areas which has been hit by cholera. So I think the Minister of Home Affairs is taking preventative steps to prevent the cholera bacteria from spreading. It's a temporal measure which will be reviewed in the coming days.
No, it reminds me about the Ebola epidemic that struck the West Africa region in the 2015-2014 because of the length of time that it is taking now for your country to get rid of this cholera.
Yeah, it has taken 3 months, but the escalation has been in the last 2 weeks. And we suspect that the period during the festive season, where human contact is highest and partying where people probably didn't take precautions, you can clearly see that during that period, there was a spike in the numbers.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The World Health Organization says heavy rains and flooding in the Democratic Republic of Congo may exacerbate the country's ongoing cholera epidemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Heavy rains in the DRC last week triggered flooding and landslides in the capital, Kinshasa, causing 45 deaths and widespread damage. The World Health Organization warns the flooding also is likely to worsen the cholera epidemic and other waterborne diseases. The current outbreak, which began in July, is one of the most severe in years. The WHO reports people in 24 out of 26 provinces have been infected with the disease. Latest reports find 55,000 cases, including nearly 1,200 deaths. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says this is almost twice the number of cases reported in 2016.
The case fatality rate in general is at just slightly over 2%, but in some provinces it is much higher. In four provinces, the case fatality rate is more than 5% and actually much larger sometimes.
He says in Kinshasa, the case fatality rate is 13%. In Kasai, 14.5%, and in Tanganyika, just over 11%. The DRC rarely gets relief from humanitarian crises. Lindemeyer tells VOA that perpetual conflicts complicate efforts to respond adequately to the cholera epidemic.
Given the circumstances, with a conflict, with lack of access, with displaced people, including now flooding, this is not unusual, unfortunately. This is a situation which facilitates the spread of cholera and other waterborne diseases very badly. And the conflict, of course, makes any sort of attempt to treat or to help the people worse.
The Central African country has 4.5 million internally displaced people, the largest IDP population in Africa. The WHO warns poor access to safe water and sanitation and poor hygiene practices are the main factors driving the latest cholera outbreak. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A South Sudanese analyst with the Juba-based SALT Institute says former South Sudan Army Chief General Paul Malong rebelled against the Salva Kiir administration because of rivalry between Malong and South Sudan chief spy Akol Kuol over resources. Jock Mandut says Malong has no soldiers and his rebellion might not be effective in South Sudan.
President favors one over the other. And so the competition was for the president's favor. General Paul Malong, feeling that he should be credited for the military's and the country's victories against the opposition, while Akol Kuol wanted to be credited for being the person who's the back of the president and protecting the president. So there was that competition for favors of the big man. Now, the way General Malong was removed was seen by a lot of people, including those who used to be very critical of his way of fighting the war and the violations that have happened and the atrocities that have been committed by the SPLA. Many people thought that Paul Malong did not deserve to be treated this way, even though he had done a lot of things that discouraged a way towards peace.
He said he was not going to rebel, but now the government is saying he has rebelled. The question that begs an answer is, does Malong have soldiers?
No, Malong does not have soldiers at all. He has been trying to use clan or ethnic cleavages to build for himself a following within a community that he comes from, the Awil community, saying that the people of Gogreal and the people of Warap, as a former Warap state, are trying to humiliate the people of Awil by treating Paul Malong in the way that he was treated when he was under a house arrest. So he was trying to bank on that, to agitate a lot of people from Awil side to come to his aid, such that if he decides to go to war, he will have many people from the army that would join his side, including those people who had already left.
There has been a talk of, you know, a private militia in South Sudan, and Malong was implicated in that. I mean, there are names like Matianga Nyor and others. I can't pronounce these names. But my understanding was that Malong was implicated for recruiting these groups. Are these groups not loyal to him?
Not at all. In fact, my understanding is that a lot of people in Awil are very unhappy about the way that he has used these new recruits in 2013, 2014, the recruits that he deployed to Upper Nile to fight SPLA-IO. Many of them, a lot of them, were killed in that war. And many people in Awil are not happy about the way he has put these ill-trained, young, desperate people and made them, use them as fodder for his fire.
Since these rumors have been surfacing, Malong has not made any official statement. Is there a reason why he is tight-lipped?
Well, he did make a statement, although it was only circulated over social media, saying that the audio tape that was attributed to him is fake.
Do you believe it's fake? I've interviewed Malong on several occasions, and the voice in the tapes that were circulating on social media sounds just like Malong.
Yes, I don't doubt the authenticity of the voice. I'm not a voice expert or anything like this, but I think it would be extremely difficult to imitate a voice to such level of similarity. What can be questioned, of course, whether indeed he was speaking about being able to raise enough force, even though he has said to these guys that all you need to do is attack WOW and attack Juba and attack and a lot of people who are angry with the government will join. I don't think he has read the situation correctly.
That's Jock Madud Jock, director and founder of the Juba-based SOT Institute. He was speaking from Syracuse, New York, with reporter John Tanza of VOA Sudan in Focus program. A U.S. entrepreneur is taking advantage of a demand for American goods in Africa, creating an online portal for cross-border trade between the two continents. As VOA's Mariama Diallo reports, it's a partnership between the U.S.-based eBay and the Mall for Africa, whose founders have figured out a way to bypass some of the obstacles associated with e-commerce in Africa.
At eBay's Silicon Valley headquarters, Thomas DeLeon, who heads the U.S. export division, is working on a joint trade project that has expanded the Made for Africa eBay storefront to not only sell goods from Africa, but also to allow more U.S. vendors to sell in Africa.
The African e-commerce market is estimated at $24 billion, and it's growing at 25% on a year-over-year basis.
He says there's a lot of opportunity in Africa, but there are problems too, especially shipping into areas where there are no precise addresses.
And that's where you have great partnerships, and that's where you have Mall for Africa coming in and really taking the pain point away.
To solve the shipping problem, all the U.S. goods filter to a processing center in Oregon and are sent from there to pick up locations around Africa. Nigerian-American Christopher Lyon co-founded the Mall for Africa company in 2011. At first, it was to guarantee authenticity and quality of goods that came from Africa. Partnering with U.S. retailers, the site later allowed African buyers to purchase products from about 200 stores in the U.S. Folayan used to bring a lot of American merchandise with him when he traveled to Nigeria.
It dawned on me that every time I went back home, I kept taking more and more suitcases. So people had access. They knew what they wanted, and they wanted to buy products directly from the U.S., but they could see it, they could find it on the internet, but nobody shipped to the continent.
And what about payments?
We created something called the Mall for Africa web card, which is pretty much our own payment platform. So we allowed people to pay in local currency, because a big thing is many people don't have credit cards in Africa.
Folayan says the program has been a quick success, doubling its exports to Africa in the past year. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, who was INEC, on Tuesday announced the date for the country's 2019 presidential and national assembly elections. Commission Chair Professor Makmu Yakubu said the polls will take place February 16, 2019. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a good Wednesday.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.